Hi, it's Diane. On my mind, the economy. Last night at a rally in New Hampshire, President Trump told supporters they had no choice but to vote for him because he's the only one that can keep the economy strong.
But you have no choice but to vote for me because your 401ks, down the tubes, everything's going to be down the tubes.
But this comes at the end of a week that saw major market volatility, mixed signals in the ongoing trade war with China, and the emerging signs of a coming recession. Anna Swanson covers trade and international economics for the New York Times. She joined me in the studio to talk about the latest on the trade war and what it all means for the health of the U.S. economy. Anna Swanson, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. Delighted to be here.
This has been such a huge week of economic news. Give us the overall picture of what's going on. Surely China is just one part of it.
Yes, that's right. So we are looking at economic data coming in from China, but also Europe and the United States as well. And I think what we've seen this week is kind of a turning point, whereas before it wasn't as clear if the president's trade war was having much of an effect on the economy. And now we're starting to see signs that it very likely is. So we saw growth slow in China and Europe, not all of which is attributable to the trade war, but the trade war is dragging there. We also saw somewhat weaker numbers for manufacturing and industrial production in the United States. And we saw the stock markets react very negatively to that, and the bond market. The yield curve actually inverted, which is a very typically a sign that a recession is on the way. So, you know, the economy overall is still strong, but we are seeing a lot of worrying signs this week that the trade war could be taking an effect, and economists are starting to fret about the possibility of a recession here at some point.
All right, let's break that down and let's talk first about China. The president actually postponed his tariffs in the hopes, I gather, of promoting Christmas sales. And the stock market reacted positively at first, but then the next day took that big dip. So what happened?
So I was thinking about this. There's this phrase, been down so long, it looks like up to me. And I think that's what happened on Monday. So the president announced that he was actually just delaying part of the new tariffs that he had threatened. So he said that he would delay tariffs on about $160 billion of Chinese products from September until December. And that's really important for retailers because that means that they aren't going to face these new taxes for the goods for the holiday season. And those taxes won't be passed on to consumers. However, there are still new tariffs going into effect for about $100 billion of Chinese goods on September 1st. So even though the president chose to delay some of his tariffs, there's still a very large new tax that the U.S. economy is going to face here next month. And I think that investors responded first positively, but then realizing that these taxes are still going to come and that the trade war between the United States and China, there just aren't many signs of a quick resolution right now.
But hadn't there been some resolution back in June?
Yes, that's right. So President Trump met with the Chinese President Xi Jinping in Osaka, Japan, and they had a relatively good meeting, I guess, a few complications, but they decided on sort of a truce. The president emerged from that meeting saying that China would buy some American agricultural goods and that he would restart some sales to Huawei, the Chinese telecom firm, and that he would postpone the tariffs that he was going to go ahead with. But that truce really did not last long, within a matter of weeks. China did not make those agricultural purchases that the president was talking about. Chinese officials actually disputed that they had promised that. And then the president clearly became very frustrated with that situation and decided to go ahead with those tariffs that he had paused.
So the question becomes, What are both sides bargaining for? What does each side really want?
Well, that's really kind of the issue here, because I think on the American side, American officials will tell you that they are united, but actually there are a lot of different people in the administration that appear to have different goals. So, you know, the president is very focused on reducing the trade deficit with China. He's very focused on China making some purchases that would help out the farmers and sell more American products abroad. Some of his advisors appear to be more focused on structural issues with the Chinese economy, like China's subsidization of products, its unfair treatment of American enterprises, its infringement of American intellectual property. The president has made nods to all of these issues, but I think he's really much more motivated by the trade deficit or this idea of getting a deal that's kind of good for American businesses.
So sort of the big swath is what he's after.
Yeah, that's right. And then on China's side, I think China's motivation is all about getting the president's tariffs removed, which he has seemed more and more reluctant to do. In recent months. He's kind of, I think, ratcheted up the tariffs as a way of being able to then pull some of those back and end up at a meeting place with China where we still have some tariffs on, but he can still take some off, if you understand what I'm saying. And the Chinese had a variety of other asks, but it doesn't seem like the United States is in a position to grant any of those. They wanted to have more access to American high technology products. That's not something this administration is interested in. So it's been very difficult to find a area of consensus to form an agreement.
You spoke earlier about how different sectors of the U.S. market are being affected. Which sectors seem to be hit hardest?
Well, the really obvious one are farmers and U.S. agricultural exports, because that's an area that the United States has a big advantage in when it comes to exporting. And we sell a lot of goods to China. Farmers often say that one out of every three rows of soybeans in the Midwest goes to China. And China has really dramatically reduced its purchases. So that has really hurt farmers, in addition to, you know, flooding and some other difficulties that they're experiencing in the Midwest.
What about the industrial sector?
So the industrial sector also imports a lot of inputs from China. It really varies a lot depending on the specific company and the specific industry. Some companies are able to find alternate products in places like Mexico or Vietnam. Some are able to source them from the United States, which is what the president and his advisors want. And others really just have to purchase what they need in China. You know, there are some products where China makes 90% to 95% of the global supply of a particular product. So some manufacturing businesses have definitely been stuck with paying those tariffs and passing those tariffs on to their consumers as well.
So it's interesting, throughout all this, the unemployment rate remains so low.
Yeah, that's right. So the U.S. economy has a lot of strength, and I think that has actually enabled the president to wage this trade war in a way that he would otherwise not have. So, you know, the administration has been saying the economy is very strong. You don't see the effects of the trade war. I think that's true, but you're not seeing the counterfactual. So you're not seeing, you know, would the economy be even stronger if the president had not taken these steps? And now with some emerging signs of weakness in the economy, I think that starts to second guess their trade strategy a little bit more.
You also mentioned earlier the so-called inverted yield curve. Could you explain that and tell us why that is an indicator of a coming recession?
Yeah, well, I'll certainly try. Basically, it has to do with the fact that investors should get more money, should get more returns for locking up their money for longer. So if they buy treasury bonds and give that money to the United States government to use for a longer period of time, say 10 years, they should get a bigger reward from that than if they're just giving their money to the U.S. government for 2 years. However, this week that flipped. And so investors were actually getting a bigger return on their 2-year bonds than they were on their 10-year bonds. And so that's a sign that investors see financial trouble on the horizon.
How significant a sign is it?
In the past, it has been quite a reliable predictor of recessions. However, you never know going forward, you know? I mean, it's a metric that is all about investor sentiment, and investors can be wrong. So it's certainly a sign that markets are very worried. They could be wrong. But then again, you know, markets can be kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, what really matters is what investors think about the state of the economy as well in a market. So if there are too many worries, it can kind of lead to a downward spiral that does actually filter through into an effect on the real economy and on companies.
You've had prominent economists speaking out on this, including Janet Yellen, former Fed chair, who said she does not necessarily think it's an indicator this time. I wonder why there are arguments that maybe not this time.
You know, so many different things have changed in the economy. And, you know, we're in a new era in a lot of ways in terms of economic indicators. And the Federal Reserve also, you know, for a long time has been focused on inflation. Inflation isn't operating the way that they, you know, expect it to. So in a lot of ways, maybe the old economic models just aren't holding for the economy that we're facing today.
And of course, President Trump has been blasting the Fed and its chair for not lowering these rates even more quickly. I mean, how much lower can they go?
So the Fed rates are very low. We are at a situation where central banks in other countries are cutting their rates and have had a slightly easier policy than the Fed. So he does have a point there that, you know, even though the Fed hasn't been raising rates very much, it has been doing so more than other places around the world. So we could be facing a kind of risk of a situation where there is sort of a global race to the bottom with central banks starting to cut interest rates. But I think that, as you mentioned, the president is very focused on the central bank, and he seems to, at least from his public comments, see the Fed as what the issue is with the economy, whereas a lot of economists would say that, you know, the tariffs and some of the uncertainty that it's created for businesses and investors is actually a bigger impediment for sure.
And speaking of what's happening globally, how are other countries being affected?
So we are starting to see some spillover effect. In general, there's just kind of a large reorganization of supply chains. You see some companies trying to move their supply chains out of China to other countries. There's been a very interesting kind of rush to Vietnam, for example, which is right next door to China and also competes in some manufactured goods like apparel and footwear. A lot of competition for factory space there to try to avoid the tariffs to the United States. At the same time, when the U.S. puts tariffs on Chinese products, you're also seeing those Chinese products get pushed out of the U.S. market into other places around the world. So Europe is confronting a phenomenon where it's seen kind of a flood of cheaper Chinese products wash up onto its shores, and that's causing some issues for manufacturers there as well. Meanwhile, of course, the Chinese economy is slowing. I do think that has mostly to do with internal factors, a drawdown of debt that they're doing domestically, but the trade war is also having an effect. And that is also, as you saw this week, dragging down economies like Germany, which is a major exporter to China. So there's a lot of interconnectedness.
And
right now,
yet there, at the same time, is this great display of wealth on the part of Chinese citizens who are traveling around the world. I was recently in Italy and Sicily, and in all of the big watch stores, you would walk in and see people from China just buying up such expensive items. So one wonders how those people in China who have resources are being affected, Or is it just the lower class?
I mean, certainly some people in China have amassed a lot of wealth, and you do see that from Chinese traveling abroad. And actually, you know, a lot of them come to the United States and spend money here as tourists. The president often complains about our trade deficit with China, but that's just in goods. In terms of services, which includes tourism, the Chinese are spending a lot of money here as well. I think, you know, China does have serious problems with income inequality and with the upper class kind of capturing a lot of the gains from the economy and a lot of times sending that money abroad outside of the country. And so that's another risk, actually, that China faces with flight of capital. If the wealthy think that the economy is turning downward too quickly and they try to get their money offshore, that can definitely weaken the Chinese economy.
So what happens if countries like Germany, for example, begin to experience really hard times? How is the U.S. affected in that situation?
Well, we have a lot of trade ties with the European Union, so we could be very dramatically affected. The other issue is that interest rates around the world are very low, and so central banks don't have a lot of firepower to help out if their economies really get in trouble, and that is certainly the case in Europe as well. But a lot of manufacturing, a lot of trade ties to the United States, so it could certainly hurt U.S. farmers, manufacturers, and other businesses.
More from Anna Swanson when we come back.
Decius Daily.
Decius Daily.
Decius Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
Decius Daily.
Sign up at decius.com/newsletter.
decius.com/newsletter.
Here's the rest of my conversation with Anna Swanson. She writes about trade and international economics for the New York Times. Yesterday, President Trump was in New Hampshire on a campaign rally, and he said something like, "You must reelect me if you want this great economy to continue," when, in fact, we've had a really crazy week, not only in the markets, but the bonds as well. So how much credit can he take for what he regards as a great economy?
It's a really great question. I mean, I have always said that, you know, under both Democrat and Republican administrations, presidents take too much credit for the economy when it's good, and they get too much blame for it when it's bad. I mean, I think the economy obviously operates kind of its own forces. It is very cyclical. So once the economy gathers strength, that momentum kind of tends to continue until something stops it. I do think you can make an argument that the president's tax cuts have provided a boost to the economy. It's been a very kind of easy fiscal environment here in the United States, and that has definitely spurred the stock market and encouraged some economic growth. The issue now with the trade policy is that the trade policy, some economists say, is actually erasing some of those benefits that the tax cuts have had for the economy. It's kind of questionable whether or not it has erased all of the benefits that that tax stimulus provided.
Tell me about those tax cuts and who did they really help? At first, weren't we told that those large tax cuts given especially to corporations would encourage them to reinvest and make goods for consumers less expensive, would bring down costs, would make the economy grow? And what did those corporations do but pay off stockholders?
That's a lot of what happened. You have seen a bit of an increase in investment from it, but I don't think it's been particularly efficient. And the worry is that now you are seeing those gains in business investment kind of dropping off due to more uncertainty from the trade war. And so the idea of the tax cut was that it would spur a renaissance in manufacturing. And this, you know, uncertainty right now from tariffs is really kind of crippling that. I mean, I talk to a lot of business owners who say they just don't know where to turn. I mean, if they move their businesses out of China and decide to move them to Vietnam or Mexico, could there be a new tariff there next week? And the administration has actually considered putting tariffs on Vietnam because of a rising trade deficit there. And obviously, the president has threatened tariffs on Mexico as well. So I think businesses are just left in this extreme environment of uncertainty where, you know, maybe they would want to invest more, but that is holding them back.
So how have ordinary consumers, ordinary taxpayers felt the impact of President Trump's tax cuts?
You know, there has clearly been some impact. I mean, I do think that criticisms that the tax cuts are regressive and that the money goes to kind of higher income people are definitely correct. So, you know, there has been more benefit to people on the higher end of the income spectrum.
So all in all, how has this affected consumption by consumers?
I mean, I don't think there has been too much pass-through to consumption, and that's the issue with a tax cut that is not progressive, that doesn't go to lower-income people. And that's what you're seeing with the tariffs as well, that this is a tax that tends to fall most heavily on lower-income people because lower-income people are spending a larger proportion of their money at the store. And so they bear a far greater burden for that when the costs of everyday goods are increased. So, you know, a lot of people will argue that taxes can be a good thing, but economists say that you definitely want to make sure you are not putting the burden on very low-income people who can't necessarily afford to pay that.
So if the economy does begin to go south, how much of a problem is that going to be for Donald Trump's reelection efforts when he has been taking the good news and saying it's all because of him? What happens if there's bad news?
I think that is definitely an issue for him. I mean, his base, I think, will solidly stay with him no matter what. We've even seen, you know, a lot of loyalty from groups like farmers that actually have been hurt by the trade war, but say that they still support the president. But for those voters in the middle, the swing voters, I think that the economy is the biggest supporting point that they would have for voting for the president. So his ratings on his handling of the economy have always been higher than the other issues. And I think it's something he can clearly point to when it comes to everyday people that he is helping them. And so, you know, that would definitely throw a lot of complications into the election for him. The question really is, if we are going to see a recession, will it come early enough that voters start to interpret that as, you know, something that is linked to Donald Trump? I mean, you know, we could see something happen very soon here. We could see nothing happen for a while. And so there's a lot of uncertainty in how that will play out in the political system.
Because isn't it true that if you do have that interest rate for long term begin to get lower and increasingly so for short term loans, that a recession could be 2 or 3 years away?
It could be, yeah. So initially, a lot of economists had predicted 2020. Economists actually get into the situation where it's always sort of safe to predict a recession in 2 years, right? So yeah, I mean, the economy is still strong. Unemployment is low. The administration still has a lot of positive indicators that they can point to. Retail sales that came out this week were very strong. Wages still haven't grown too much, but ticked up a bit last month. So there are definitely some economic indicators that the administration can still point to. And often I find that's What's really notable about economic policy in D.C., when you have Democrats and Republicans commenting on, for example, the jobs data that comes out every month, it's almost like they're looking at two different reports, right? They'll emphasize just totally different metrics. So there are some that the administration is still focused on.
What about Democrats? If this trade war continues, how are they going to deal with it?
Well, it's a really interesting question. I do think that the pain that the trade war is causing for certain groups like farmers and manufacturers, and with this latest round of tariffs, consumers as well, opens up some areas where the Democrats can criticize the president's trade policy as ineffective or harmful. However, in general, there are actually more similarities, I think, between the president's trade policy and the trade policies that the Democratic Party has long talked about than I think Democrats want to admit right now. So for a long time, Democrats have called for branding China a currency manipulator, for example, which is something that the president went ahead and did last week. They talked about taking a tougher line to China, about increasing standards, for example, for Buy America laws, which requires the government to purchase more goods from American companies. That's something that President Trump has done. And even in his renegotiated NAFTA agreement, there are some changes that he's made that are certainly a nod to Democrats, like requiring a new minimum wage standard for some auto workers in North America. So it's a little bit tricky for them because in some ways he has kind of tried to steal their playbook and tried to appeal to the union rank and file, if not their leaders. And so they can easily criticize his trade policy as being harmful. But when it comes to the actual policies, they face a dilemma of whether they're going to be, you know, more similar to the trade policies that he has talked about, or if they're going to go another route, for example, like Joe Biden has, and continue to support the Trans-Pacific Partnership and other trade, you know, trade approaches that the Obama administration had been taking.
One last question for you. Apparently, the president is interested in buying Greenland. Can you help me to understand why?
It's a great question. I wish I was a fly on the wall for those conversations. I mean, theoretically, it could be great to buy Greenland, you know?
Why?
Well, this administration has talked somewhat about the strategic importance of the Arctic in coming decades. Although, to be honest, that is a bit of an acknowledgement that climate change is real, right? The fact that the Arctic will be more and more important as a region. But as you might have guessed, there is an issue with purchasing other sovereign countries. That's not something that we go around doing for many good reasons.
Greenland is a territory of Denmark.
That's right.
So to what extent would Denmark be interested in selling its territory?
I think from the comments the last few days, it's safe to say that they are not interested at all.
Anna, thank you for being here.
Thanks so much.
That's all for today. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, or send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. Our theme music is composed by Jim Brunberg and Ben Lansverka of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Our engineers this week are Cliff Gallagher and Josephine Neonai. Thanks for listening. I'll be back with you soon. I'm Diane Rehm.